You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. Most of last week, I spent at the Community of Writers Conference in Squaw Valley, which is considered among the top writing conferences in the country. One week is focused on poetry. The second week is focused on fiction, nonfiction, memoir, and screenwriting. It draws some of the most talented and successful writers to its staff, and then they in turn work with some of the most hardworking up-and-coming writers across the country. And it's all done in what I found to be a truly remarkable and giving spirit of community. It's a spirit that's been cultivated over the decades, and I tried to capture some of that one evening as we were listening to readings out under the stars. So here's a bit of that flavor from Elizabeth Rosner, John Pula, and Dana Johnson.
My name's Elizabeth Rosner, and I'm here this week up in the Olympic Valley, the Squaw Valley Community of Writers, in this gorgeous bowl nearby Lake Tahoe. The mountains are ringing all around us. It's such a privilege to be in a place where so many of us are striving to make sense of the world through this meager language we have.
My name's John Pula. I'm originally from Minnesota. I live in Seattle now. I came here because of the word community and seeking a community. I'm not a writer professionally or even full-time. I'm an engineer. And so far, that's exactly what I've found, is a people that believe in the written word and its power.
My name is Dana Johnson, and I'm an associate professor of English at the University of Southern California. The first time I came to the Community of Writers, I didn't quite understand what it was. I thought, oh, it's just like a writer's conference, and it'll be nice, and I'll get work done, and I'll meet other writers, and it'll be great. But it actually made me feel as though I was truly entering a community and a history.
The Community of Writers was founded 48 years ago by Oakley and Barbara Hall, Burnett and Mimi Miller, and a few others. The Hall sisters and their extended families have continued the structure and the serving of the writers community. I want to let you know that some of the Sacramento area contingent was talking a lot about the book by my next guest, fiction writer Jane DeLory. It's her first novel. It's titled The Balcony. It was just released in March, and it encompasses stories of many generations of people whose lives and drama unfold at the same country home in France, in fact, with haunting scenes that play out on the very same balcony. Jane is a native Sacramentan. She taught English and completed her master's in France at the University of Grenoble. And she will be at Time Tested Books in Sacramento tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock. I'm happy to have her in the studio now. Welcome.
Thank you. And I love that we have started talking about Squaw at the Squaw Valley Conference, because over 20 years ago, when I was living in France and just starting to write fiction, I actually spent a day at that conference. And it was my first experience of a writing conference, actually. And I remember Oakley Hall spoke and Amy Tan spoke, and I was so inspired by the feeling there. And I went back to France with Oakley Hall's book on novel writing, and that was one of the first books on craft that I ever purchased, and it had a big influence on me. So,
would you say more about how important it is to have a community around you shaping your writing as you're creating a story or a book?
It's so important to, I believe there are some writers who can do it without a community, but I am not of that population. Writing is a very solitary act, but in the end, we are trying to make our work public. And so at a certain point, one has to go from this insular relationship with the manuscript to a draft that can go out into the world. And readers are extremely important, good readers of your work that can give you honest feedback, but also just support, spiritual support, really, in the endeavor of trying to get it right, trying to find some kind of truth, this endeavor that we're all sharing.
This book, as I said, is a compilation of what could stand as individual stories, but they're all wrapped around this estate, and in particular, this balcony.
did you see a place that inspired this when you were in France? Is this place real, since your book is considered a historical novel?
I started writing these stories, drawing inspiration from a real forest, the forest of Châteauroux, France. My ex-husband's grandparents lived on the edge of the forest, and his grandfather in particular had a very close relationship with that place. And I developed my own relationship with that place through him and then through my morning runs when we would visit. And so over a period of about 15 years, I was writing stories that came from that forest. There are some nuggets of truth, of fact, but then much of it is my imagination. And the estate in the forest includes a manor house and a cottage. And the cottage is based on an actual abandoned cottage. But the manor is all my imagination.
But it's really about this balcony, and you've turned a place into plot by centering on the balcony. Mm-hmm. I think that's a challenge. That's interesting. You can turn a character into a plot, but the one constant through all the stories is the balcony.
Oh, I love that you say it that way. Yeah, you're right. And when I went to put those stories into a book, it was the balcony, it was the estate and the balcony that helped me to do that. That was the organizing principle as I put the manuscript together.
So let's talk a bit about what we're talking about. The very first story in your book helps us know kind of where we are. There's a young American university graduate. She comes to the French manor because she's going to work as an au pair. And she ends up developing a crush on the husband of the family. All of this is not the landscape that was in her dream world, in her fantasy. But take us through quickly how the balcony plays a role in that story.
The balcony, well, the moment that Bridget, I'll call her Bridget, although she's Brigitte in France to her employers, Bridget has a very active imagination, and she's very drawn to stories, and she has an idea of what France will be like. And she ends up in this sort of industrial area that doesn't live up to her expectations. But the balcony on the estate, the balcony that's attached to the manor house where she's staying, has quite a dramatic history because there was a suicide. It's a presumed suicide where a woman fell from the balcony 70 years before. So immediately that captivates her imagination. But also in terms of the book, and when you say place is plot, we come back to that character who jumped or fell from the balcony sometime before.
It's actually a good place to read. Would you start at the very beginning of the first story in the book? And this is Jane DeLorey. Her debut novel is The Balcony. She will be at Time Tested Books in Midtown Sacramento tomorrow night, July 17th at 7 o'clock.
Au pair. In June of 1992, I left Boston for France with everything in front of me. For the next 2 months, I would be an au pair to Hugo and Olga Boyer's daughter, Elodie, at their country estate near Paris. The position came to me through my advisor at Boston University, where I'd just finished a master's degree in French and where Hugo would join the faculty in the fall. As Olga explained to my advisor, who asked me if I was interested, she and Hugo needed a jeune fille to help Elodie practice her English and to watch her mornings while Hugo worked on his book and Olga prepared the house for their departure. I would have a large, sunny room on the top floor and my afternoons and most of the weekends off. Paris, with all of its delights, is only a brief train ride away, Olga wrote to me in French, her handwriting large and baroque. Elodie is an easy child, and her father and I are not monsters. With the money I'd make, I could spend a third month in Paris, and then see how I might stay on in France, where I believed I was meant to live.
Sounds so idyllic. Let me describe your writing, which takes us calmly and gently through a storyline, no big bumps in the road. And I wonder, in reading your stories, whether something is really going to happen, and then all of a sudden, bam. There is a paragraph, that reveals and makes everything whiplash quickly snap into place, and the whole story ends up meaning something else. But it time hops. Elodie will show up in a later story. Hugo will show up in a later story. And I think in some moments, I maybe needed a matrix to keep everybody straight. Have you heard that before?
Yes. And I am always sympathetic to readers. I'm a reader myself. And so, and part of that, when we talked earlier about having a community of writers and having good readers for your fiction or your poetry, is that movement from what the author knows to what the reader needs to know. Because the author knows pretty much everything. So I understand it. I sympathize with readers needing to piece it together. It is very much a novel in stories for me. So I wrote it that way, where each chapter has its own arc, has its own character development, and stands alone. And I've found that problem of putting, you know, everything together is also what many readers tell me they love about the book, that they love the puzzle.
Yeah.
It's probably a challenging book to read over the period of 6 months. And I actually put a timeline on my website. I've been visiting some book clubs, and I tell them, you know, if you're going to be reading the book over a few months, there is a timeline of the estate. So it's a timeline of the property, you know, for readers who want to double check instead of flipping back.
Yeah, you did make the choice not to go chronological, and it goes over many different decades and unrelated families that live in the house at different times. I'm going to add that besides being an associate professor of creative writing and English at the University of Baltimore, you have received a Penn O. Henry Prize and a Pushcart Special Mention and the F. Scott Fitzgerald Story Award. Your story work has been highly recognized and published. At what point did you say, I want to take the leap? I don't want my career to strictly revolve around stories. I want to try the bigger form.
It really came from the book decided what it wanted to be. I wasn't thinking of this as a novel in stories when I laid out the 12 stories that I had been writing. And I hadn't been writing the stories with a specific book in mind. If anything, I thought, oh, a collection. I love linked collections. I love Olive Kittredge. I love Winesburg, Ohio. So that form, of course, influenced me. But it wasn't a conscious decision. But that's just the book that was there. When I laid them out and thought, how does this work as a book? The estate wanted to tell its story. And that meant that I eliminated some stories that I had written that I was attached to. I killed some darlings. And I wrote a pair at the opening. So it was the book knew what it wanted to be. This is what we do. You have to believe in the magic of the process because it's so terrifying. But there is truth to that, that if you let the story figure itself out or let the book figure itself out, the result is usually what it's supposed to be.
It is the leap of faith in writing, isn't it? You put a character out there and you get quiet and try to listen to what the character has to say, what the character wants to write. Although some people are very linear and structural in their process. Your themes include growing up, as Brigitte is doing, marriage, motherhood, growing old, having affairs, suicide, life, death, weaving all kinds of relationships. Did anything in this book grab you and say, you have to do more with me? Put me in a next book or a next story?
The voice of Brigitte in the opening story is a first-person voice of a woman looking back in middle age, and I am in middle age, and I look back. So that reflective voice is something that I'm playing with more now. Most of my short stories were in third person. I'm very comfortable and I love third person, but I think I personally had to get to a point where I could write in first person because I needed a certain degree of distance. I'm a writer who works with a lot of distance. And so I would say that is that first person reflective voice is something that I'm still exploring.
Has Brigitte been very close to you in many ways?
Is she?
She is, with many, it's, fiction is so funny that way, because I was talking to my daughter. My daughter is a fiction writer. She's goes to a school in that specializes in the literary arts. And we were having this conversation the other day about how when you start to write the story, even if you were starting with a nugget of emotional truth about yourself, the minute that character takes over, it's not you anymore. So I see Bridget, Bridget acts in ways that I didn't act. She's much more, she's much bolder than I am in some ways. But there, yes, there are definitely elements of myself in her.
That was a wonderful concept at the Writers' Conference last week. How much nonfiction is in fiction, but vice versa, how much fiction is in nonfiction, in memoir and some of the other styles. Well, I know everybody's welcoming you back to Sacramento, your parents, John and Cecilia, yeah. Happy to have you here. Congratulations, you're about to get married too.
Yes.
Yeah, and this first debut novel is getting rave reviews, being called stunning and shimmering and lots of terrific words. So thank you, Jane.
Thank you so much,
Come
Beth.
Back this for the next one.
Really a pleasure. Thank you.
That is Jane DeLorey. Her debut novel is titled The Balcony. She will be at Time Tested Books in Midtown Sacramento tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We'll post a link to her website. That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Our team, Jen Picard, Cody Drabble, Bert Johnson, Mark Jones, and our executive producer, Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us.